Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Ukraine Calling. I'm Oksana Smirachuk for Hromadske Radio in Kyiv, and we're bringing you our feature in-depth interview followed by some new music from Ukraine. And in our interview this week, Kirilo Lukarenko talks to journalists Michael Watsurkiu and Katerina Kruk about the attempted assassination of Russian journalist Arkady Babchenko, the sting operation, and the media storm that followed. What it means for Ukraine, for journalism, and the ongoing hybrid war that Russia is engaged in.
This week, the media reported that on the 29th of May, a Russian journalist and Putin critic Arkady Babchenko had been gunned down in his Kyiv apartment. The next day, at a press conference, we learned that Arkady Babchenko was in fact alive and well, and that the murder has been staged by the SBU, the Ukrainian Security Service, as a sting operation. The operation provided investigators with evidence for the arrest of the organizer of the Russian plot, as well as leads to information that killings were being planned for about 30 other people. The news that Babchenko was alive was a shock and led to a mixed reaction in the local and international media. Many journalists were taken aback at having taken a false story at face value. Ukrainian media and authorities were criticized. They were equated with fake news or disinformation campaigns. On the other hand, from others, there was praise for the Ukrainian security services for having pulling off a clever operation that saved the life of one journalist and potentially many more, for having stood up to fight back against this slew of political assassinations that have happened to Kremlin critics, not just in Ukraine, but in other countries. For having stood up to fight back against the slew of political assassinations that have happened to Kremlin critics, not just in Ukraine, but in other countries. So, which is it? In conducting this sting operation, have Ukrainian authorities done indelible damage to their credibility and to the credibility of the Ukrainian media? Or, on the contrary, was it all worth it to save the life of a courageous journalist and perhaps many others, to strike a blow in the ongoing hybrid war? Here on the line with me is Michael Batsurkiv, Canada-based journalist, global political analyst, and formerly spokesperson for the OSCE monitoring mission in Ukraine 2 years ago, 2014-2016. Journalist and political commentator Michael Batsurkiv has taken the position of supporting the statement of Reporters Without Borders, and the statement reads, quote, "It is always dangerous for states to play with the facts and also on the back of journalists," end of quote. So, Michael, what is your personal feeling towards what happened?
Okay, thanks for having me. Well, first of all, let's go back a little bit and talk about where we stood before all of this came out. And what I mean by that is, you know, the reputation of the Ukrainian security services, as many of your listeners, I'm sure, know, is that they have quite, I think, a bad reputation for botching investigations, for not following up on leads. And I'm thinking, of course, 2 years ago to the grisly murder in broad daylight in Kyiv of Pavel Sheremet, you know, the journalist, that still has not been solved. In fact, some Ukrainian journalists have come up with more evidence than the investigators have. And then there are other cases, too, which have not been solved. Not one big fish, so to speak, from the previous administration has been put behind bars. So when they come out in a press conference broadcast around the world at prime time and say, look, we foiled this plot, the journalist is alive, we have evidence, well, I think, number one, it's great that the journalist Babchenko is alive. But secondly, I think the onus falls on them very, very hardly, and on the Poroshenko administration, to come up with the evidence of why this was necessary. Why was it necessary to fake the murder, broadcast it around the world, there are a lot of questions that need to be answered. And in fact, the Committee to Protect Journalists in the past few hours has come out with an urgent request of President Poroshenko to answer many, many questions, including how imminent and credible was the alleged threat against Babchenko? What evidence do they have? And why did the SBU need to go to the extreme measure of announcing Babchenko's murder in order to stop the alleged plot and arrest the alleged organizer? And, you know, finally, of course, the big question is, was it all worth it to fake the murder when, at a time when there's so much fake news going on? Russia is one of the biggest sources in the world, of course, of fake news. And it looks to some that Ukraine is taking a page out of that playbook.
But actually, my question was, what is your personal feeling about it? How did you receive the news, and what was your second impression after his, to say, resurrection, as it is being joked here in sure. Ukraine?
Yes. I was very saddened because, you know, I practiced many, many years as a journalist, still consider myself a writer. And whenever someone of a person like this who has such a distinguished record, who is so brave to criticize Putin so openly, who obviously has a price on his life when he dies, we're all saddened. And, I started writing about it, tweeting about it. And my good friend, Anna Nemtsova, who knew Babchenko, wrote a very painful piece saying this is such a tragedy. And so many other journalists wrote similarly about him. And then what do you know, 24 hours later, we're awoken by breaking news that he's actually alive. So I felt almost a sense of betrayal. I mean, on the one hand, yes, we're totally happy that he's alive. But secondly, you know, could this really have happened? We actually thought, many of us, that it was fake news, and then it wasn't, but then it is. So I think many of us feel, myself included, a dangerous line has been crossed. And I'll tell you why, is that when the SBU or the presidential administration or Lutsenko come out again with big news, I think we're going to feel that we need to double and triple check it. And that is not a reputation any government or any person really wants.
And actually, the SBU or Security Service of Ukraine and General Prosecutor and Mr. President himself, they claim that actually a plot was found here, and they averted at least one death of Babchenko, obviously. And also they say that about 3 dozen of journalists are endangered, and they call at least 2 names of people who may order it on the request from Moscow.
Well, again, I go back to what I said at the beginning, is that these very same people have a reputation for deceit or fabricating evidence. As for the president, many in our memories are still very fresh of his deception over the Christmas holidays, taking a secret vacation to the Maldives, and then having to say later on that indeed he did do it. So, you know, you can do this when you come from a kind of platform or position of moral authority, and you have this reputation for being honest. If you look at the shoddy, embarrassing, I would say, performance of the Prosecutor General Lutsenko on Amanpour the other night, when he was asked direct questions of what evidence do you actually have, he could hardly answer. So again, when you go to these extremes to actually stage or fabricate a murder, and then you come out to the world and say, well, sorry, it actually didn't happen. We did it because we wanted to save someone's life. You have to come out very quickly with some kind of answers and evidence, as the Committee to Protect Journalists is demanding right now.
What do you think? Why actually the Ukrainian authorities did this?
As I wrote in my CNN.com piece, I think they were desperate for some kind of win, quote unquote, that having not solved many other cases, including involving journalists, that they needed to come out and prove that they're capable of breaking a case. Now, I hate to sound overly cynical, but again, as I've said in the international media the past few days, one can't help but think that there's also an election around the corner next year. Poroshenko's popularity ratings are in the single digits, in other words, in the tank. And, you know, they might have felt that they needed to prove that they're capable of this big win. But, you know, I'll go back to also what I've said in several panels in Ukraine over the past few months, is that reputation takes a long time to build up. And I do believe that, you know, in its arguments against Russia, in its statements on the hybrid war being played out in eastern Ukraine, that up until now, Ukraine has held the moral high ground, that it's been very believed. The well of sympathy and support has been absolutely incredible. But then they go, and within a few minutes, I think they've caused a lot of damage to themselves, and that actually makes me very sad.
So what about the international implications for this situation?
Well, I think, you know, I follow the international media very closely, and I think it's almost a universal feeling. The international media feels it's been played, and that, you know, it's going to be, it's actually a lot of the feeling is this is absurdity, and it's going to be a lot more difficult to believe the Ukrainian government henceforth. Now, I think that sentiment also extends to many foreign governments. They're just in shock because a lot of them did issue statements of sympathy when they heard that Babchenko was killed. And then I have to add, too, that, you know, monitoring the discussions on social media, especially among members of the Ukrainian diaspora, this has had actually perhaps the unintended consequence, an unfortunate consequence of dividing the community. I can't remember seeing as many heated arguments about whether this was feasible or not, whether it was a good idea or not. So I'm hoping this will only be a temporary kind of flare-up, but there are a lot of arguments taking place among members of the diaspora on social media on this one.
And what do you think about domestic implications? Will it eventually actually help Poroshenko to succeed in the future presidential elections?
I doubt it. If I read the poll correctly yesterday when I was on Zik TV, they were polling Ukrainians on whether they thought this caused positive or negative impact on the country's image. And it looks like the majority said it caused a negative damage, negative image to Ukraine. And, you know, I've been speaking to many of my former colleagues in Ukraine, and many of them actually support my position that this perhaps was not a good idea, that I think many people feel that it could have been done another way. Don't forget, the SBU is one of the best resourced arms of the government. Tens of thousands of employees. And also, I think this incident also raised the raised questions about where are we with the reform process, especially with the SBU. It was supposed to have been broken up a long time ago. International donors are demanding that. And, you know, turned into a more leaner organization that is focused on one or two main areas. And no, I think that the kind of negative sentiment towards Poroshenko is quite high, because I don't think people feel that their lives are getting better. I don't think that people feel the safety factor, for example, in big metropolises like Kyiv, is getting better either. So this is happening actually relatively soon to the election season, and I think it could backfire on them. Now, one quick thought: maybe they're going to surprise us. Maybe they're going to come out with a press conference and say, look, this is what we have. There is no other way. And, they need to say that this was an extreme measure, that we fake something, and that it's not going to happen again, because that's why I use the term, it's playing with fire.
But actually, this is what is happening. They are claiming that actually it was an extreme situation, and they are on the way to find how Russia is trying to influence the situation in this country.
Well, I've listened to Babchenko as well, and I think I'm hearing things that he hasn't necessarily said publicly, but it does seem more and more that he might have been played to a certain extent, that the evidence that he was shown was very flimsy, and that out of fear, I think he agreed to take part in this. And, you know, I feel very badly for him, of course, having to go through this and having to even deceive his family, friends, and colleagues. But, you know, given the very poor, acrimonious relationship between the security services and journalists, and him being forced in a way to collaborate with them, I think it could be very difficult for him to go about his job. Of course, he's going to probably need 24/7 protection. It's very difficult to do journalism when you're protected by policemen all the time. And I'm also hearing from journalistic colleagues is what kind of credibility will he have as well? Again, maybe he had no choice, but this is a very, very serious step to take for a journalist to collaborate with the state security services and be complicit in an operation that was staged, that was faked.
Thank you. It was Michael Butyrkiv, Canada-based journalist, global political analyst, and formerly spokesperson for the OSCE monitoring mission in Ukraine 2 years ago. So, your personal feeling about what happened with Arkady Babchenko?
So, first of all, obviously, thank you very much for having me here and having this discussion in English for the international audience, because for me personally, for a person who is working in English on Twitter for already 4 years, it was a huge surprise to witness the reaction of foreigners on the situation, on the case with Arkady Babchenko, and how actually at some point everything became more about the security service of Ukraine and Ukraine as such and not about Babchenko himself. That is why I think it's really very important to have more voices from Ukraine explaining obviously our own perspective as people who are walking the same streets and obviously living in the same country. So going back to your question and to my personal reaction, I remember that the first moment I've learned about assassination of Babchenko, it was Tuesday evening, if I'm not mistaken, and I was with friends who knew him personally, who have worked with him. And immediately it became very personal for all of us, because everyone who is involved in public sphere, in commenting, in journalism, in being very vocal critic of Putin, of Kremlin, and of Russia for what they have done in Ukraine and continue doing in Ukraine, in Syria, and other countries, we do understand that we are targets, either on Twitter by trolls or bots or threatening emails, but also even personally. For me, personally, the most shocking detail was that he was shot at his home, at his own apartment, meaning that there is no place, there is no refuge, there is no place where you can feel safe. So the entire evening and then the next morning, they were very tragical. I think for many people in Ukraine, especially those who are involved in journalism or this public comment and public sphere, it was mostly about self-reflecting how the balance and peace that we see around. We go to the city center of Kyiv and everyone is smiling, singing, sitting in the terrace and drinking coffee. And this peace is so fragile. It takes just one shot. It takes one use to realize that our reality is very drastical, that we are at war and we have a terrorist state, the biggest one in the world, against us. But the moment I've learned that he's actually alive, I've felt nothing else but pure joy, just for the human being that he's alive, that we didn't lose yet another friend, yet another good friend of Ukraine, a good journalist whose work is brilliant, is really worth reading.
Basically, I felt the same. I felt this pure joy, but also some people felt some different feelings. They felt betrayal, I would say. It always happens when you learn that there are some lies and you feel a little bit, or not a little bit, betrayed.
I was asking myself a question, and this is still something that I would like to have more information from SBU about from Security Service of Ukraine. Did we really have to go through this emotional roller coaster? Because this is the site which was hard for everyone. Because at the very beginning, it felt that we've lost a dear friend of ours, and then the next day he's alive. And you ask yourself a question, did all this pain that was very much real of ours, the mourning and the condolences that we shared to his family and the memories that we revived about him, this all was very real. And I think that we shouldn't be ashamed of that. And we should question SBU whether it was really the best scenario possible. So far, we don't have enough information. That is why I don't have a tendency saying it could have been done differently. I'm not an intelligence officer. I'm a journalist. I'm a political scientist. That is why I can comment on the things that I'm aware of and know about. We don't have all the details of this operation. That is why I think it's going to the great length saying that you could have done it differently. You should have done it differently. Based on the information we have so far, and based, first of all, on the interview that Babchenko himself gave yesterday, where he answered this precise question, and he is the person who was in the very center of the entire operation. He told that obviously he didn't trust SBU from the very beginning, so it took some time for the trust building, the credibility building between themselves, between people. But when he saw the professionalism of people who have been working with him, then he trusted completely that he could be part of this operation. And then they decided all of the points, all of the different stages of the operation, and he agreed to that. And no matter how our fear or our emotions were harsh, just try to imagine for one second what he, his family, his wife, his daughter, his mother, and obviously all the close relatives have to go through. So I don't think that we should be too much egoistic when it comes to this case. And remember all the time that it was first of all about saving their human life, the concrete human life. Secondly, it was the intelligence operation, which wasn't about faking something and creating a fake news. I'm really very much against using these words, because we are taking out of the context just one aspect of the entire operation. An operation was saving humans' life, uncovering the entire network, which was planning an assassination of roughly 30 people, and obviously shaking the entire network so to prevent them doing the next things like that in future. So this is what it is about, looking in the entire picture and obviously asking whether it was worth it, but not only in the context that I was personally really very much emotionally involved and was it worth or not, but looking in at the results and the entire operation.
Are you satisfied with the information published by the Security Service of Ukraine about the person who ordered this assassination, and also about the person who on the Russia side who also ordered it? What is your opinion of the quality of the information released by the SBU?
So first of all, there is a specific style of the modus operandi of Ukrainian SBU, which is giving information piece by piece. Even this is what we saw yesterday, for example, or during the last few days, that almost every 2 or 3 hours there is a new statement, new piece of information from Ukrainian SBU, meaning that this is how they work. They don't give you the entire picture from the very beginning, like at once. Also, I think to some extent, it might be also the case that the operation is still going on. So like we've been aware about the most public aspect of that, because obviously, taking into account the popularity of Babchenko, it would be impossible. It would be simply impossible to stage anything involving him and not to have this kind of very, very big public reaction, both in Ukraine but also abroad. So far, what I find really appealing and what I really find very professionally done were the video and audio typings. When you can see the suspects, when you can hear their voice. And this is really very strong and very solid piece of evidence, because if you have something just printed or paper, or if you have only words of SBU themselves, and we know perfectly that it's not the most trusted institution in Ukraine, then there could be a field of speculation. With videos and audio recordings of certain people, This is the evidence which is much harder to shake. I'm still waiting for more details because it was really very much confusing when Mr. Herman started answering the questions yesterday at court when they were deciding what is the measure of punishment so far for him.
Mr. Herman is the suspect.
Yes, exactly. So he's the first suspect who was detained by SBU.
Ordering the murder, not the perpetrator.
Actually. No. He was, in fact, what he has been describing himself, that he was, in a way, a contact person between Russia and, you know, and people who were makers, let's say so, like hands, the assassins themselves. And this is the moment when it became confusing because he started stating that he's from counterintelligence. And in this regard, you see the conflict of two intelligences, of two institutions. To be honest, I think so far I'm not very much convinced that he's really from the counterintelligence. Obviously, it might be the case that certain institutions, security institutions and intelligence institutions, haven't been so closely in touch with each other because there is also a tendency of having some kind of inner conflicts. But I don't think this is the case right now. I think this is very wise advice that he might got from someone, how to use the public reception of the entire situation, of the entire operation, and ticking on this very, very weak point.
Some international journalists and some opponents of the Ukrainian president and the Ukrainian authorities, and Michael Basyurkiv mentioned this in his interviews, they say that basically it was a special operation which was invented in order to help Poroshenko to win his presidential elections in a year time.
Well, first of all, in a year time, no one will remember about the situation because the intensity of life and of events in Ukraine is so incredible that, as you mentioned, I also work in Prague and also work in many European capitals. And I always have a feeling that amount of events that are happening in Ukraine in one day, this is something that the normal, calm European country could have in 1 month. So talking right now about the elections, which will be exactly in a year, is too far-reaching. Like, definitely, based on the intensity of Ukrainian events, based on the intensity of the political life in Ukraine, this is not something that can be remembered. And we don't have this kind of situation right immediately. So, obviously, it might help, it might work on the... But I wouldn't say it plays directly into the hands of Poroshenko. It would rather, if the solid evidence will be presented by SBU, it would rather play in the hands of increasing the trust of Ukrainian society in SBU itself, but also in intelligence and security institutions. I don't think that there is a direct link going straight to Poroshenko. This is the first aspect. The second aspect, which was mentioned, and obviously the reaction of foreign journalists and commentators on Ukraine. This was very sad situation for me because, to be honest, we not only were criticized by people who are always against Ukraine and always using every kind of occasion, like Russia, for example, or some Russian puppets in Western countries, but also so-called friends of Ukraine. And for me personally, people with whom I have been working for the last 4 years, almost on a daily basis ever since Maidan. And I saw a very critical stance from them, very critical perception of the entire situation. But I was really very much surprised how much, I don't want to use the word egoistic, but it was really very much egocentric. There was a nice blog written yesterday on Washington, published by Washington Post, which was written by actually Ukrainian journalist Maxima Ristavi, who is now non-resident fellow at Atlantic Council. And I never used that such words on my Twitter, but he actually very sharply said that, dear Western journalists, this situation is not about you and it's not about how you felt about it, but was about saving the human's life. For me personally, it was a huge disappointment, the statement of the organization which is called Reporters Without Borders, so one of the biggest organizations which is aimed at protecting rights of journalists. And they are saying that nothing can justify faking a journalist's death. And I was asking myself and also my readers, even saving someone's life? So I think there is a great deal of not understanding the Ukrainian reality, that first of all, Russia not only has occupied Crimea and waging war against us in Donbas, but also is terrorizing Ukraine on different levels. We've already, many people have mentioned the assassinations of Ukrainian journalists, but also I think 2 years ago there was a very loud case, very important one, when a high-ranking Ukrainian intelligence officer was killed. It was also car bombing. Maxim Shapoval was his name. And this is the person who was responsible for the work of the team that was collecting evidence of the crimes against humanity and war crimes of Russia in Ukraine, meaning that Ukrainian evidence that later was used in international courts against Russia. So we have, this is a hybrid war. And when someone is talking about hybrid war, this is exactly the precise explanation, description of that. Not only media, not only fake news, but also eliminating people who are the key persons who might show to the world and to Ukrainians, obviously to our audience, that Russia is an aggressor.
What do you think this stance, this position of the Western media and some journalism journalism organizations, will it be eventually transformed into a change of attitudes and policies of the Western governments towards the Ukrainian government?
I don't think so. I don't think so, because judging, first of all, on the official reactions of governments or ambassadors or institutions, not journalists themselves and their personal opinions and journalist organizations. But, for example, there was a statement by the European delegation in Ukraine and European Union commenting that Ukraine has the right to protect people on its territory and citizens, using whatever means. And once again, I think there are certain things that are getting out of focus. So like three things that I would like to mention that for me were very much critical. And this is something that I also was pointing out to my foreign friends. And I do work very closely with foreign journalists and politicians and think tankers. So first of all, it wasn't the operation aimed at lying to the Western audience or lying to Ukrainians. It wasn't about ridiculing media as such. And this is really very wrong to take just one aspect, one episode of the entire operation out of context. Obviously, there was a very strong media element, publicity element, public element, but the entire operation wasn't about that. It wasn't about faking Babchenko's death and then showing look, SBU has resurrected him. It was something more. And that is why we have to look, as we are professionals, we have to look in the entire picture, not only just focusing on our own perception. Secondly, I think this situation is really a very serious test for Ukrainians, but also for Ukraine, for foreign journalists and editors working with Ukrainian issues, showing that there is a certain bias when it comes to covering Ukraine. This is something that was really very widely commented among my network of friends on Twitter, for example. When we compared the perception of media and journalists when it came to the assassination attempt of Skripals, and also the victims of this situation of using the nerve agent, the poison, were dozens of UK citizens in Salisbury. And back then, no one, literally no one, I haven't seen, not even an article, I haven't seen a tweet that questioned the qualification and professionalism of MI6, the security service of Great Britain. No one was saying that UK is a fallen state, they weren't able to protect their own citizens, and the damage is much bigger than in case with Babchenko. Then when it came to Ukraine, even before he was resurrected, let's say so a few hours before after the information that he was killed, immediately people started criticizing SBU, saying that it's so deeply infiltrated by Russian agents, is absolutely impotent, it's not able to protect Ukrainian citizens and really key figures when it comes to the Russia-Ukrainian war. But then the moment when we learned that actually SBU did something, SBU became even the bigger victim, because it shows a certain bias that there is a critical stance towards Ukraine. And no matter what our institutions are doing, whether we're doing something or whether we aren't doing anything, there is always criticism. So I think this is the moment for many journalists and experts in Western countries of looking at the mirror and really thinking, do they have an objective stance when it comes to commenting on Ukraine? And the last point that I would like to make in this regard is it really shows once again that no matter that Ukrainians and our friends are repeating every single time, during every single occasion, that we have war in our country, that this is real. West still thinks that you can deal with Russia in white gloves, that they don't like the entire operation because it was inelegant, because it had an element of really staging someone's death and making it public information and so on and so forth. And I really have a feeling that West still hasn't left its comfort zone and still hasn't realized how serious it is for Ukraine. Because we have war going on. We have almost every single day we receive news that someone was killed at the front line. And number of our victims are in thousands of people killed, and then we have millions of IDPs, internal refugees. So for us, it's not about looking nicely. And I do believe that so far, based on the information that I have so far, and obviously not being a great fan of Ukrainian security services as such, but in this very situation, in Babchenko case, with what we know so far, I think it was worth going at this length to save humans' life and to uncover the entire network. It was worth it.
Thank you very much for your opinion. Katerina Kruk, a journalist and political analyst, a fellow with the European Values Think Tank in Prague, was in this studio with us. Thank you.
Thank you.
We usually play new music for you. This week, we're bringing you a golden oldie from the legendary band Brate Hadyukine, the Viper Brothers. They began playing together 30 years ago, when the Soviet Union still existed, but was teetering on the brink of collapse. Their cynical lyrics continue to be relevant today. Here's their unmistakable sound from the days when lead vocalist Kuzma was still alive with one of their biggest hits, Chervona Fira, The Red Wagon. Enjoy.
Співали. Прошли стали козаченьки. Правда на мотив, наш паровоз вперед летит. Їхала шляхом, 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 червона віра, віра, їхала шляхом, 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 червона віра, віра, віра. Потім вибирали народних депутатів, потім вивчали пісні батьків, дідів. Потім з голодухи почали їсти коней. А хто шмат не вирвав, той лаяв москалів. Їхала шляхом, 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 червона віра.
Next week, we'll be back with more commentary on events in Ukraine with interview host Oksana Smirichuk. We'd be happy to receive any feedback from you. Write to us at ukrainecalling@hromadskeradio.org. This is Oksana Smirichuk in Kyiv, and thanks so much for listening.